and welcome to Euractiv's Agri-Food Podcast. I'm Natasha Foote.
And I'm Gerardo Fortuna.
And here's your weekly update on all things agriculture and food in the EU from Euractiv's Agri-Food News team.
So welcome back. We often speak about what happened in the week. That's our job, to bring you the latest from the EU agri-food world. But we also speak about what's cooking over there, let's say. What's in the pot?
What's on the menu?
What's on the menu? And this was the title of one of our special episodes of the podcast.
It was. So, fond memories.
Yeah.
So what is cooking?
That's what we're going to do this week, indeed. We'll be talking about something that is scheduled for next week, actually. With this commission and in pandemic period, anything could happen in terms of the scheduling of the legislative proposals from the commission. And also, we're talking about something that was delayed quite a lot.
Yeah. When was it supposed to first come out? I can't even remember now. It's been such a long time. I feel like I've been talking about this for a long time.
It'd be the third or the fourth quarter of 2020, if I'm not wrong.
I think you might be right. Well, I'm on tenterhooks. We haven't actually said what's coming. It's such a tease.
Probably some of our listeners already got what we're talking about. We're talking about the Organic Action Plan to help member states stimulating supply and demand for organic products. But maybe Tash could tell us a bit more about this.
Well, I mean, organic has been something, you know, really high on the agenda. We've all been talking about organic farming for a long time now, pretty much since the Farm to Fork strategy, which outlined this kind of target of 25% of agricultural land in the EU being farmed organically by 2030. So that's a threefold increase of where we're at right now, because to put it in context, although Europe has, you know, some of the largest shares of organic agriculture in the world, it's only around about 8% of the total of the EU agricultural land that is farmed organically. Well, that's exactly what the EU Organic Action Plan aims to do. So we've already said that it's long overdue and it's set now finally to be released next week. So it's been eagerly awaited, everyone asking the same question. Okay, we want to increase organic, but where's the demand for organic? How do we increase this? How do we support this? How does this happen kind of in practice? So we've actually had a little sneak peek of a draft version. Obviously, it's a draft, so, you know.
One of the drafts, actually.
One of the drafts. A fairly recent draft.
No, there are many drafts circulating. We don't expect many changes because, I mean, it's not something that you can really change overnight, no? Yeah, okay, there are some outstanding issues, but not huge controversial points at this stage, because I'm sure that some of this initiative could actually create a ruckus, particularly in the MEPs.
Yeah, I mean, this draft kind of outlines this, you know, this three-pronged plan of attack, plan of action, which, you know, spans increasing demand. So increasing demand from the consumer side, as well as increasing production and also improving the contribution of organic farming to sustainability. So the commission is aiming to provide the kind of the necessary tools, both legal and non-legal, to create these conditions that will support organic agriculture in the EU. So I think kind of one of the most interesting elements. I mean, the plan is, as I said, pretty wide, this kind of three-pronged attack. There's a lot of different points that were interesting that we looked at in the draft. But I think the biggest question that everyone's been asking is this question of how do we increase consumer demand, you know, demand on the consumer side for organic? If there's not a market for organic, it doesn't matter how much you're producing if you can't sell it. You know, and there has to be a convincing kind of strategy to provide for farmers, because I think, you know, it's important to point out that, you know, obviously farmers can't just overnight decide to be organic. It's something that is part of a really long-term strategy, might change completely the way that they do their practice. You know, it's an enormous investment. And, you know, there needs to be some certainty for farmers that there's going to be a market for their produce. So the plan outlines bunch of ways that they're trying, that the commission puts forward to try and increase and stimulate this demand. It ranges from things like promoting the EU logo, which is, you know, the organic logo that's already in use, doing kind of like awareness campaigns and things like that. But I kind of think one of the most interesting points in the draft is this idea of including organic in green public procurements to simulate a kind of a greater uptake of organics in public canteens and in public procurement. So green public procurement is this idea that Europe's public authorities are major consumers and they can use their purchasing power to choose environmentally friendly goods and services and that way make this kind of contribution to sustainable consumption and production. So as I said, it's in things like in canteens, you know, really prioritizing and promoting organic produce in public canteens. And so, and it points out in the draft actually that, for example, Copenhagen is put forward as this example. It was the first city that reached 100% organic public canteens. And this was supported by these kind of organic farmland that was surrounding the city. And Vienna as well has a kind of network of organic urban gardens that supplies public canteens. It also touches upon how to basically prioritizing organic produce in schools. So the EU runs this kind of the school scheme, which supports the distribution of food, of milk, of vegetables and fruit to millions of children throughout the EU of all age ranges. And the draft talks about how member states should prioritize the distribution of organic fruit, vegetable and milk products in the EU school scheme. In fact, it even says the schools that are kind of lagging behind have the lowest level of organic. They're looking, the commission's trying to urge them to double their share of organic and for others also to increase it. And I think this is interesting. I mean, it's all very well and good. I mean, but then the draft kind of outlines this and then it comes to this one sentence that for me is a bit of a stickler. And I think it's the sentence that, you know, the issue that's the crux of the issue that, you know, it always comes up. It then says, however, several countries currently do not prioritize organic products for the school scheme and for public procurement because they're often more expensive than non-organic. And there doesn't really seem to be much kind of comment on that or anything further to explain how the commission is going to address this other than, you know, it's going to raise awareness about the importance of organic and do this kind of communication about why organic's important. But seems to be for me somewhat lacking also in the question of, okay, well, if it's more expensive than non-organic, how practically are schools going to invest in having more organic produce? You know, they're going to have more funding. So there's still some questions there for me.
It's a specific issue that you're touching, which is basically similar to the general one, which is basically, we're talking about boosting consumption, so incentivize consumption, and again, it's it's like not creating a market, but really to doing something that has an effect on the side of the demand, which is quite ambitious for the commission. I mean, it's okay, we are in the single market, and okay, but it's even difficult for member states, I mean for government sometimes to have this kind of
impact.
Yeah, stimulus.
Hmm.
I mean, okay, we're not talking about buying bonds or other commodities or whatever, but yes, I mean, we're talking about influencing a market, which is something, I mean, you know, the commission tried to do all the time, even in the energy legislation. But when it comes to certain aspects like supply, price of these products.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I mean, it's, you know, we always say, the lack of impact assessment on everything, basically. But, it's still not clear at which level the organic market is at the moment. So mm-hmm. It's something promising, of course.
Yeah, definitely. And also, as I was saying about how this translates into long-term demand, because I think things like public procurement policies, you know, can come and go, can fluctuate depending on the kind of political willingness behind it. But obviously, as I said, this is a long-term investment for farmers.
It's 10 years, but also the plan is 2030 plan. No, so it's the long-term aspect is quite important. I'm just running through the main initiative. There are like 22. This is the draft again. There are 22 initiatives. I don't see legislative ones like regulation or directive. So I don't see, you know, hard law, a lot of soft law. Yeah, a promotion policy, which is something this will create some problems.
There is some interesting kind of references to the common agricultural policy though, right?
Yeah. It's basically member states are invited to set national values, so basically data, targets, in their CAP strategic plan for these Green Deal targets, which is basically the organic one, the 25% organic area by 2030, and increasing the percentage or encouraging positive trends. Let's be very rude. Let's imagine the Commission asking member state to apply to implement these organic requirements, and the member states could say, oh, what's legal basis? And they say the organic plan, and the organic actual plan, and the member states say, yeah, but I mean, we're talking about common agricultural policy. Common agricultural policy is hard law, is you know, three regulations and so on. Organic action plan is political declaration. So it's an ambition of the Commission. So there's in the hierarchy of sources, you know, this is a controversial part, and I'm sure that MEPs, but even ministers will attack this aspect if it's gonna stay. Yeah, because I mean, again, we're talking about a draft. It's also true that we're talking about the recommendation that from the Commission to put in the national strategic plans of the Common Agricultural Policy to ask the member states to implement these goals in the national strategic plans. So even in this case, we're talking about more political commitments, even from the side of the member state. So it's quite interesting. Yes, it's true. I also will mention what you previously consider things like that. But even this promoting the EU logo is not because I mean it's also useful in terms of tackling counterfeit. Mm-hmm. When it comes to organic products, it's a quite definitely bad phenomena, particularly if you want to build
trust
the market
with consumers. Mm-hmm.
Indeed. And I mean, the newspapers report quite a lot cases of organic products that weren't organic and that were sold as organic. And this, of course, affects even the aspect like the subsidies that you receive to farm organically. So this mm-hmm. is also interesting.
It really undermines farmers as well that are making this effort to, you know, produce indeed, more sustainably, indeed. Not use chemicals. It's very, very damaging kind of both ways for consumers and for these farmers that are farming organically. So it's an important point.
And I also see a lot of innovation, which is something that probably was overlooked so far, because again, when it comes to the recent organic regulation that has to come into force because it was postponed, the entry into force, it was it became law in 2018, but the entry into force was postponed by 1 year. So it's going to start in 2022, the new framework, the new EU framework for marketing organic products. And there's a lot of focus on the use of new technologies and all this kind of innovation stuff. There's also this, you know, develop a database of certificates of all European producers, and also, of course, blockchain and all this fancy technology that are always there when it's about the Commission. There's also the call to create this specific organic producer organizations, mm-hmm. Which, you know, in order to give them a greater market power, particularly when it comes to the unfair trade practices. It's like the trade union, no? So it's if you have a strong producer organization, your leverage in negotiation is higher. And again, just one last thing. Again, the funding under Horizon Europe to promote alternative approaches to contention inputs, and also to plant protection products that contain biological active substances. You probably know that, for instance, the pesticide for organic products, copper, has, you know, several critical aspects too. So again, there's a need for innovation even in this domain.
Definitely.
And the other news of this week is this call from a group of scientists, actually quite a big number of scientists. We're talking about 269 European scientists and 21 association of health experts. So basically, association of certain particular doctors dealing with a very specific illness. So they basically did this call for making the Nutri-Score mandatory for the entire EU, which is basically, you know, it's a long-standing issue. The European Commission is expected to put forward the proposal for a harmonized food labeling scheme, and this will consider nutritional aspects too, because at the moment certain nutrition declarations are mandatory on foodstuff in the EU legislation, but further information concerning certain nutritional properties of food can be displayed on the label, but on a voluntary basis. So the member state that want to adopt this, they have to communicate to the Commission, and the Commission has to find out if they're compatible with the EU framework and so on. For instance, countries like France, Belgium, and Germany, when they adopted the Nutri-Score, they asked the Commission for the validation, and you know, that time the EU executive assessed the Nutri-Score compliance with EU legislation. So there's this option that, you know, the Commission is considering this idea to have a EU-wide complete nutritional labeling. So not only on certain aspects. They're expected to come up with a proposal in the fourth quarter of 2022. But if it goes like the organic action
2022,
plan.
Oh my goodness. I feel like this saga is already never ending. I don't know, the Nutri-Score saga.
Yeah, 2022 is tomorrow. Fourth quarter of 2022 is tomorrow.
I'm still in for at least another year of this debate.
Yeah, indeed, because I mean, there will be the impact assessment, the stakeholder consultation. So before the 2022, yeah, it's a long journey.
Don't worry, everyone. We will bring you all the updates. I know you're worried.
If you really want. And yeah, you probably know that the issue is mostly between countries in Southern Europe and countries in Northern Europe, basically. We can say like this. You know that there are these maps of Europe based on certain aspects, and there's the map of the countries that use olive oil, and countries that use butter.
The big divide. That's the divide between us as well, Gerardo.
Indeed. It's also true that I, for instance, Tash is very fond of salt butter.
Salted butter is the only kind of butter. Controversial statement.
I never tasted such thing, so I know that it exists, but
you're a convert now, aren't you?
Kind of.
Gerardo.
I'm open to, you know.
You're open-minded.
Yeah. Quite open-minded, indeed. Yeah, so basically, the Nutri-Score divide is basically the same of olive oil, butter divide, because it's, you know, the issues with Mediterranean countries, because certain products of the Mediterranean diet are ranked quite low in the Nutri-Score, starting from olive oil, which is basically E or D. For instance, the Spanish government was pushing in favor of this Nutri-Score. They had a deal with the author of Nutri-Score, and the olive oil was kind of exempted, let's say. But now a lot of food producers in Spain are really up on arms. There was the declaration from the producer of the queso manchego, the producer of jamón bellota. So, for instance, two Spanish MEPs have filed a parliamentary question to the Commission asking to basically protect the Jamón Bellota, this famous aconfed Iberian ham, protect from the potential damage caused by the Nutri-Score. So we are moving to that level of debate. So save olive oil, save a specific kind of food. And also, for instance, another MEP, this time Greek, sent this other parliamentary question to the Commission asking if they're considering some form of compensation for the adversely affected Mediterranean food products. So only in February, we counted 7 parliamentary questions only on the Nutri-Score coming from Mediterranean MEPs. So 5 Greeks.
I mean, you can see why, though, because olive oil is actually the basis of life in the Mediterranean. I mean, you know, you can see the uproar.
To be fair, also cheese. Yes, cheese are not performing quite well. For instance, mozzarella is one of the cheese that perform, quite good, and it's between C and D. Just for your personal information, the Nutri-Score is basically is converting the nutritional value of products into a code consisting of 5 letters, so from A to E, and every letter has its own color. So A is green, E is red, so it's really close to the traffic light system that was some member state like Italy opposed quite firmly in the last decade. I mean, we live in Belgium, and in Belgium, you know, it's quite used, but yeah, maybe in some countries not that that common. So yeah, let's see the next developments. Again, the news is both the starting of this letter, this call from scientists, and at the same time the fact that Mediterranean countries and Mediterranean policymakers are basically up on arms and trying to oppose this Nutri-Score. We spoke with an Italian MEP, Paolo De Castro, and he basically said that the next week he's going to meet the Italian minister together with other people to organize the Mediterranean front. So
the Mediterranean uprising against the Nutri-Score.
Yeah. And that's all from us this week. This week, the AgriFood podcast was produced by Euractiv's AgriFood team, Gerardo Fortuna and Natasha Foot, with the technical support of Euractiv's podcast producer, Evi Chiori. And you can also listen to this podcast on all major streaming platforms, including Apple, Amazon, Stitcher, and Spotify.
And be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss the latest news from the EU on everything agriculture and food. I'm Natasha Foot. Thanks so much for listening, and see you next week.